up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam. Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Turn it up.
After 1 week away with the newborn baby, I am back, ladies and gentlemen, and better than ever, as Eric Bischoff's song would be. Episode 149, we are live and living, color and funky like a monkey, if you will. So good to be back, Derek, and so good to be back with my boy, Derek. Pancakes and Power Slam's co-host, how are you tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. How's everything going with you, Chris? You're the one with all the big news tonight. Again, 90 minutes is never going to be enough for the two of us and our friends with Ryan Fuqua and all the special guests you have and all the people that call in. I mean, there's just not enough. Pancakes and Power Slam's nation is always alive. And, yeah, what's the big news with you? What's going on with you?
Man, I have had many, many sleepless nights, and man, my wife's a trooper. She's doing, you know, the best she can, and she's hardly getting any sleep. And I'm a very soft sleeper myself, so yeah, I'm getting hardly any sleep as well. I mean, when I say hardly any, I mean hardly any. I mean, the baby's crying all the time, and the sleep is a very minimal thing that I'm getting. And it's a friend that I've lost that has gone away, and I really want to find again. I really missed my friend's sleep, and I really want to reconnect with my friend's sleep, because sleep is a wonderful thing. And I have been deprived of that for the past week, over a week now. 8 days ago is when we had our second boy. And but more than all of that, though, just a few hours of sleep a day. More importantly than all that is the beauty of birth. I'm a huge proponent of the beauty of birth, and every time I look into that beautiful little eight-day-old boy's eyes, I am just enamored with joy and glee and appreciation to God for allowing me to birth another baby into this world and pass the Featherstone legacy on, and just continue to spread the love in every way you can think of it. So with my very, very minimal sleep, with my extreme fatigue, hey, I went to the gym tonight. I got me an Amped Energy drink. We're not paying to advertise Amped Energy, but it's worth advertising tonight because it's going to keep me up for the show. But I'm excited. I always get excited with wrestling talk, and that alone is a natural high. Would you agree, Derek?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the Featherstone legacy is going to be as big as the Von Erichs.
So, I like it.
you got to keep that up, and you know, a couple more, three or four, and then you're set, man.
All right, man. I'll be the Fritz of the family. I suppose that would work. I very, very, very sadly, I hope that my family doesn't follow the same trail as Yvon Eriks. Very, very sad to say that, but it's true. Yeah, but at the same time, past all the personal problems from the Yvon Eriks, from a wrestling standpoint, they left an amazing trail, an amazing legacy, so much that they are WWE Hall of Famers. So really, really can understand why it's important to respect the Yvon Eriks. And I tell you what, man, Kerry Von Erich was, without question, Kerry Von Erich was one of my favorite wrestlers as a kid. I was a huge fan of the Texas Tornado. And when he was with World Class Championship Wrestling, he was the modern day warrior. So I was a big fan of Kerry Von Erich. There was something about Kerry Von Erich that was just infectious. He had the look, he had the charisma, he had the physique that every man dream to be like and every woman dream to be with. So, you know, he was just a man. He had charisma. And when he was Texas Tornado in the WWE, he won an Intercontinental Championship. And to me, it was something about Kerry Von Erich that just screamed main eventer. He was the man in world class, but of course, you know, of course in WWE, he didn't get as far as I'd like at the time. I remember 1990 was his big year when, or was it 91 when he beat Perfect for the Intercontinental Championship? I think it was 90 that he beat Perfect for the Intercontinental Championship, and really had an amazing year that year as a Texas Tornado, and the spinning punch that he would do. And man, I was a huge fan of Kerry Von Erich.
Oh, I definitely was. And the thing about Kerry Von Erich, because I always knew who he was because I'd read the magazines, but mm-hmm. I never really saw him perform until he came to the WWE and was the Texas Tornado. I loved him. I thought he was awesome. He was great. And to read about his lineage, his history, like, you know, back in, you know, the early 80s with Ric Flair, the David Von Erich Memorial, and just, I mean, so much stuff mm-hmm. he's done with Jerry Lawler down in Memphis. I mean, he was the modern-day warrior. And, I mean, he is such an underrated performer. I mean, he's in that class, but they don't mention him enough. But, I mean, just to mention him is, you know, of course, he belongs in that class. I mean, his spinning hit was just, it was awesome. It was always spot on. Almost reminds you of the Superman punch that Roman Reigns does.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Kerry Von Erich for sure, man. He was, you know, before I actually got to see him perform, I knew how important he was. And when I did see him perform, I was a total mark. So it was awesome.
Absolutely. I was a total mark as well. You know, I never really had a chance to really see David Von Erich. I think he died in 83. And I was a little bitty baby at that time. Not a little bitty baby, but I was very, very, very young at that time. I was the same age as my boy, as my oldest son. But, yeah, David was really pinned to be the Von Erich. He was really coined to be the Von Erich. And he had some good matches with Flair in 80, you know, in the early 80s. I believe it was 83 when he passed. But yeah, him and Flair they went at it. I think it was like a DQ finish that he had against Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And, yeah, I mean, they really was going to make David Von Erich, the man, and, you know, talk about your untimely deaths. I mean, we can go down the Von Erich list about, you know, concerning that. But, yeah, I mean, I've looked at some tape of David, and yeah, I see the career. I mean, just the Von Erich family period. Just Carrie and David, and even Kevin with the with no socks and no shoes on. I think he was probably one of the first feet wrestlers that I remember. When I was a kid, I always remember Kevin for having no socks and no shoes on, wrestling in world class. And it was something about just Kevin and especially Kerry that was just absolutely amazing. And I would venture to say that the Von Erichs is probably the most popular wrestling family of all time. And I say that because of this. Of course, the Guerreros have probably the best lineage of as far as family wrestling is concerned. But Eddie's really the only, well, the Harts, I'll get to the Harts in a minute. But Eddie's really the only person that really shined out of the Guerrero family. Of course, you had Hector and Chavo Sr. And just all the lineage of Guerreros that's, you know, go from generation to generation. And, of course, Chavo Jr., you know, he was a ECW champion and he was a tag team champion, but never really anything else. And has some interesting angles. He, you know, he had a good feud with CM Punk and ECW, and he had a good feud with Rey Mysterio, of course. But, you know, he was never really the guy. You know, he was never really a standout guy as far as a main event guy. And as far as the Harts are concerned, the same thing. Bret Hart was the guy. Owen Hart could have been the guy. But even before Owen's passing, he was in the business for quite some time at that point of time. And they still gave him the shaft as far as really having the opportunity to be the guy. And yeah, with the Von Erichs, and of course the Wyndhams is another family that has some lineage to it, but Barry was only the guy. But with the Von Erichs, to me, world class was such an amazing territory in the early 80s. And at that time, you know, Michael was a world champion there. Kerry was a world champion there. And even with Kerry went on to become NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So, and Michael, before his passing, he was on his way to become NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So it was just something about the family as a unit. When you come to the Guerreros, the Guerreros was never known during one period of wrestling of being a family unit. Of course, there's heritage that came with the Guerrero name, but the unit of the Guerreros, the unit of the Harts, weren't even there. And as far as the Harts are concerned, you know, you got Bret and Owen, and then you have, you know, Stu, but they weren't a unit at the time. You know, in world class, you had Kerry, you had David, you had Kevin, you had Chris, you had Fritz. You know, all of the Von Erichs were together as a unit, and I don't think we've ever seen something. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that, at least in the past 40 years, as far as a unit like that, as family is concerned. And to be honest with you, I don't even know if we'll ever see something like that as far as the Von Erichs are concerned.
No, I don't think you will. You absolutely hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's like the Von Erichs are almost like the Jackson Five. It's, you know, you
Yeah, yeah.
But with Devon Erics, I mean, again, it was, they were all together. They were the unit. They were all the brothers and the father. And, I mean, they just, they were in their primes all in the same time. And, you know, you've had their tragedies with them and everything, but, I mean, they all went to perform against the likes of Ric Flair. And, I mean, it's great for championships. So that was an absolute dynasty at their time in Texas. I have a sister, or no, I'm sorry, sister-in-law. My cousin married a girl from Dallas, and she knew that I liked wrestling and blah, blah, blah. And when I first met her, she was like, "Have you ever heard of the Von Erichs?" I was like, yeah, of course I have, you know. And she was like, "Oh, my goodness. I grew up in Texas back in the 80s, and the Von Erichs were bigger than Michael Jordan." I mean, that just tells you what the impact they had, and she lived outside of Dallas. And it's Von Erichs were a dynasty. They are a dynasty. That's just their, they are the greatest family in wrestling. Period. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, with that being said, speaking of families, I'm going to transition real quick before we get into Raw to another family, the Dos Caras family, the Dos Caras and Dos Caras Jr. And Dos Caras Jr. is better known as Alberto Del Rio, who is now known as Alberto El Patron. And of course, El Patron means the boss. And I've been checking him out on Ring of Honor. Fantastic match against Christopher Daniels at a previous Ring of Honor episode. And I did not like, I liked Alberto Del Rio's character in the very beginning when he first came in the WWE. I liked his character. I think just the smugness of his heel character was, I loved it. There's something about cocky heels that I like. But they really decided to take his character in a different position that was just not helpful to him at all. And I think when he lost to Edge at, I think it was 28 that he lost to Edge, if I'm not mistaken, to a 20, yeah, I think it was 28 that he lost. In 2011, he won the Royal Rumble. That was 27. Yeah, so it was 27 he lost to Edge. And so he won the Royal Rumble 2011, and he lost his match in 2011. And I think after that is what really hurt his character, when he lost his Mania match to Edge and then subsequently lost the next month to Christian at Extreme Rules when Edge was forced to retire. But I think that really hurt his character. And he never really got a chance to rebound after that. He won a few world titles. I think he won two WWE titles and two World Heavyweight Championships. But he never really had a chance to really rebound after that. But I tell you what, him leaving the WWE is a blessing in disguise, because I can see how over he was in AAA when he had a mask. This guy oozes charisma. I had the amazing opportunity with Ryan this weekend to go to the Dayton show and Ring of Honor. And by the way, cheap plug, pictures of the show was on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. But I had a chance to go there. Fantastic. I've been to many ROH shows. Fantastic show in Dayton. And he went against Roderick Strong. And I kid you not, I'm not exaggerating whatsoever, this was that match was one of the best matches I've ever seen in my life. And top to bottom, bell to bell, one of the best matches I've ever seen. And it was such an amazing feel to it. And you could tell that El Patron, Alberto El Patron, is really in his, he's away from the politics of the WWE. And you can tell. I mean, even when he started coming out with, when he started coming out and as Alberto Del Rio, towards the latter part of his reign, you could tell that his heart wasn't in it. But, you know, the Lucha Underground, he's with them now, he's with ROH now, and you can really tell that his zeal is back. He was so over in Dayton. It was absolutely amazing how over he was and how much charisma he has outside of the WWE. You can just really tell. And you can tell that he loves the business. I saw the match with Christopher Daniels on TV, and of course I saw it live, you know, in Dayton against Roderick Strong. And you could just tell how much he loves the business. It was absolutely amazing. And I tell you what, man, kudos to Alberto El Patron. He won me over. He won me over because I wasn't a fan of his for quite some time now because I thought he was boring. But he just turned over a new leaf to me when he showed me how much charisma he has outside of the WWE. Absolutely amazing. Kudos to Amazing ROH Show. And just and real quick, there's some rumblings going on that the WWE is interested in bringing on someone that the Pancakes and Power Slam show interviewed a few months ago, and that's Moose. So if this is true, and they bring on Moose, Pancakes and Power Slam show needs some type of something in that deal. But yeah, kudos to Moose, man. I really hope that it's these rumblings are true. That would be absolutely amazing, and we would possibly be able to see Moose versus Brock Lesnar after all. So kudos to ROH right now, and kudos to Alberto El Patron and Moose.
Oh, good, definitely. I saw El Patron's first match on Ring of Honor. It wasn't live. I'm sorry I missed that show, but it was on a flat screen TV, so it was pretty big screen TV. But again, his arrogance and I can understand, and yeah, I think he's been a lot better outside of WWE because, I mean, they can use him as a main eventer, and he can actually kind of pull the strings and really make that happen for himself. And ROH is the place to be right now as far as just wrestling independence and coming up acts. So, I mean, definitely it was kind of a step up for him because he was a stalemate in WWE and wasn't going to go anywhere. But he's got a new beginning here, and I'm totally stoked to continue watching him do it. The only thing that annoyed me when he came out in the car, when he was in a WWE, when he kept honking the horn.
Yeah.
That annoyed me. I hated that. I was like, stop doing that. But other than that, you know, I don't know real well. So, I mean, he's doing great for himself, and I was glad to see him. I was glad to watch that match, and he did excellent. Perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can really tell that he loves the business. His WWE stint didn't really give him justice. Now, I very, very lightly follow him as Dos Caras in AAA. I'm big into Japan wrestling, but AAA wrestling is just not something that I follow a lot. I mean, I've seen AAA matches. I've seen Mystico before he was Sin Cara, and of course when a lot of the other superstars that came to the WWE from AAA, I believe that Jared had a run there too. Not recently, but some years back. Semi recently, but yeah, he had a run there, and there's a lot of WWE wrestlers that had a run in AAA, and so of course Rey Mysterio and Jericho, but yeah, so that part of AAA I follow, but I don't follow AAA like on a weekly basis. But, you know, the buzz of El Patron being there or Dos Caras being there, you know, was very known that he was there and he was the man in AAA. And I can certainly see it without a doubt. I can see it. And the charisma that he has is absolutely amazing. And so kudos to El Patron. For that. Ladies and gentlemen, we will have our Raw talk on the other side. We'll be right back.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, free. Our mind, let's go. The whole squad is making it clear we've taken this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God? Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings, you see in us. But our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Frizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Dash Wunderkind with the strength of 100 men, with one intent, to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday raving, anticipating I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals, you and God for my defense. In Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful. Bobby Eaton, me and Priest, we the dangerous alliance. Nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep. You all what you speak. This too sweet.
Till the genre is took back, we reppin' that work pack. The foundation's shaking, no mistaking. Yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust. Pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness. Some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap. He turning the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
Hey, yo. It's survey time. Did you come here to listen to any of the other radio shows? Or did you come here to listen to the P and P? Survey says, one more for the good guys. Pancakes and Power Slams, episode 149. Before we get to Raw, if you didn't listen to me last week, which I'm sure you did, I was on there for a hiccup last week. Just wanted to let everybody know, you know, a day after my little boy was born, just to give the announcement and just to give the announcement of that, and also give the announcement of the special guest host for episode 150 next week. And, of course, that person would be former WWE superstar JTG, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm very, very excited to talk to JTG and to see what his thoughts are on WWE product and how his release came down. And I'm sure it was with a lot of controversy. So pretty excited about that and where he is right now as far as his indie work and his Body Spartan. I'm not getting paid to plug that too, but I'll plug Body Spartan any day of the week, man. BodySpartan.com. Go there. I'll tell you what, Tyler Rex is a great guy. And, yeah, he spearheads BodySpartan.com. If you want to be a fitness, if you know, everybody, I've been in fitness for 10 years now, and I think it's incredibly important. Your health is very, very important, and Body Spartan, the team over at Body Spartan really gives you a awesome regimen to really help with not knowing what to do, when to do it, and not knowing what exercises to do to work on this and that. BodySpartan.com certainly gives an amazing regimen and some really good help for for that. Or if you're if you like to lift weights like myself and want to do something a little bit more difficult and push yourself a little harder, definitely a avenue for that as well. So go to bodysporting.com and check them out. And of course, JTG is part of the team and just getting really awesome special guests for episode 150. Very, very excited about that.
And we got a lot of stuff going on in pancakes and power slams. And, you know,
yes,
again, Chris, we've been in the show for a while, and we haven't heard a trivia question yet.
I was just about to ask you one. How appropriate. So the first trivia question goes to you, or as Hulk Hogan would say, you, Derek. And that is, what wrestler was known as the Boogie Woogie Man?
Jimmy Valiant.
Yes, you are correct. The Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant. I was a big fan. It's cheesy. You know what's so funny about Jimmy Valiant? People, gimmicks like that, and that's a flavor of the week topic in and of itself. Gimmicks that would not work these days. The old gimmicks that just would not work. And yes, I think that even maybe next week's. Usually have them ready and in store, but I think that might jump ahead of a few. I think it might be next week's or sometime in the next month or so. I think that we will do that, because that alone is absolutely funny and a funny topic and a fantastic topic to talk about, because people like Boogie Woogie, Jimmy Valiant, would absolutely get booed out of the arena these days. But back in the early 80s, NWA, he was the man, Boogie Woogie Jimmy Valiant was. And his gear was just so hilariously funny. He had, like, you know, some striped gear going on. He looked like some type of blonde-haired zebra. And it was just absolutely funny. But there was something about the little Boogie Woogie dance that he would do, kind of like, you know, what JYD did. And it just worked. It worked, and it was successful. And I was a big fan of Jimmy Valiant back in the 80s.
I mean, they had a lot of stuff going on for him. I mean, it was like the New Age Outlaws back in the 80s. And speaking of New Age Outlaws, yeah, they came back and lost, but it was good to see him again. However, Jimmy Valiant was somebody that, you know, the Valiant Brothers, they really made the tag team division back in the day. And I wish there was some team this day, Chris. I wish there was some team that could take this by storm and just make the tag team division theirs. The Usos have done it. They need competition. Does the Ascension have competition?
No, well, they seem to be pushing the Ascension. I don't know what they're going to do with the Ascension of Mania. I've said this for weeks now, and I'm still going to stick to my guns with this. I still think they're going to have some type of nostalgia match at Mania. We're only, you know, what, 6 weeks away from Mania. So whoever, you know, the builds need to hurry up and happen right now. I mean, they need to start building WrestleMania as we speak. And they've done it for a few things, but not enough for sure. And something, and before we get to that, before we get to the tag teams, I do want to address the Stone Cold podcast with Triple H. And I liked it. You know, I was just discussing with some colleagues on Twitter about it, and one person said it was disappointed, and I liked it. I liked it. I think the podcast was good. You know, when it was better than I expected. That's probably why I liked it, because it's better than I expected, because as much as Steve Austin isn't, you know, doesn't care about kayfabe, Triple H kind of has no choice but to stay in kayfabe because he's Triple H. And so, you know, he embodies the WWE. He embodies the essence of the WWE. So for him to step out of kayfabe at all is kind of like, you know, stepping out of himself. So, you know, but I think it was a good balance. I think that Steve Austin really cornered him a lot of the interview, which was good. That it forced Triple H to step outside of kayfabe, which is good. And I think it was very important. You know, I wasn't interested in seeing any type of just cheesy kayfabe filled interview, and I had a feeling that Austin wasn't going to do that, and he did not do that. So I was very happy about that. So kudos to Steve Austin for that. But Triple H shared a lot of really good things, and I was really happy about what I saw, and how Triple H just really talked about how, you know, in a lot of ways, kayfabe is dead, and, you know, and I agree with that. And he was talking about how it's just a different breed, and, you know, how to address the smart marks, and it was just a really, really good, rich interview. And a couple things that he said that really stood out. He talked about Punk, of course. But there was a couple things that he said that really stood out to me. One of them was he was asked, "What would he do? what would he do? What is one thing that he would change about Raw?" And he said that he would make it 2 hours, and you know that was an amen moment to the max, because just he was saying that third hour was so hard to write. And so hard to, you know, to write from a creative standpoint. And I can see it, because you and I, we've seen it, and I'm sure just about every other person who watches Raw consistently sees it, that the third hour is just pointless in the first place, because a lot of it is filled with just recaps and, you know, just social media stuff, and it's just filled with that. So none of that is important. It's like they ingrained WWE Livewire into Raw now. That's basically the type of feel that I get by at least an hour of Raw. And every single, and even Austin said something about this compared to NXT, and because every single Raw is a 20 to 30 minute promo. Even Austin says something about that. You know, you and I, and when I interviewed Matt Taven, he mentioned something about that in his interview, which made so much sense when he guest hosted. And I've been saying something about that for a long time, and you have too. But you know, every promo is 20 to 30 minutes. Starting Raw, and it usually involves John Cena and or the Authority. But with NXT, you know, we don't get a lot of long promos. It's just really good wrestling again. And I, you know, when you're dealing with Raw, you really it's storyline building, which is important, the entertainment part, but it still boils down to a lot of just fluff. And we don't want to see fluff. We want to see good story building, which goes into the second thing that the second biggest takeaway that I got from that interview is that he said that, you know, a lot of times people don't, they want it, and they want it now. And I've said that, and I've even written articles about that. I totally agree with that. And he said that he's a fan of the slow burn. He's a big fan of the slow build and just really spending time with building characters. And I'm like, I think that that's great, but where is it? We don't see it with anybody. And of course, Vince has the final say with everything. But it's like, why can't you do that with Roman Reigns? And which is a perfect segue into Raw, you know, and we'll talk about Raw and how it ended and just theories that can come up from that. But I really wish that we would see those two big things that Triple H emphasized actually incorporated, you know, on Raw. But it's Vince's, you know, like he said, at the end of the day, Vince has the final say. But whatever happened to the theory and the art of a slow build with the wrestler not rushing him, which could potentially bury and just sabotage his character? Hope we don't see that with Roman Reigns.
You'll see that with Roman Reigns. It's already happened. But to me, one of the things, the genius things, is whoever thought that Triple H would be in the position that he is in now?
Yeah.
Whoever thought that? You think of him back in the 90s when he was DX. He was Shawn Michaels' left hand. He was just there.
Or even before that, even the Terra Rising and Jean Paul Levesque when he was in WCW, he was just, talk about your, you know, your second or third match mid-card guy. I remember one of Dust Wunderkind, Alex Wright's first matches, he beat Triple H. If anybody remembers Alex Wright, you know, he had a hiccup of a career in WCW, and, you know, he's back in Germany. I don't think he's came back since, and that was like mid to late 90s. So, but he beat Triple H when he was Jean Paul Levesque, and that really goes to show just the direction that they had for Triple H, or, you know, Jean Paul Levesque, or Jean Paul Lovesome at the time as well. And Terror Rising was another gimmick name they had for him. So he had the look even at that time, but they didn't really see anything in him to really make him a top guy. And to go from that to one of the most powerful people in the WWE is absolutely mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, he's got – I think he knows what he's doing. I mean, I really do. With the WWE, I mean, he clashes with Vince, with what you read on the dirt sheet sometimes. But I give him a kudos for it. I'm behind Triple H, and I think that he knows, for the most part, that, you know, what wrestling fans want. And again, but he's got – Vince McMahon to shoot his veto his bills. So that's what kind of makes it a treat in some part. But again, I really think that Triple H pretty much has a better mind for it. And I can't go wrong with Triple H as far as somebody that, you know, I kind of agree with his analogy at times. I do, but I don't. But I'm not one to totally dismiss it and say that he's absolute garbage.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say he won me over, you know, because I've talked to we've interviewed many wrestlers, and I've talked to many wrestlers over the past few years, and through the show and through other websites that I've wrote for. I've talked to many wrestlers, and, you know, some say that he's all about burying them, and others say that he's been a really good mentor to them. I would attribute that to, and I've heard some, you know, some comments that's been said, you know, that he's said before, and that was very offensive. So, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like a tug of war with Triple H. But what I will say from a business standpoint, if he has won me over at all, at anything, I think he's won me over from a business standpoint, because NXT is absolutely amazing to me. I love NXT. I love the storylines. I love just the organic feel to it. And, you know, everyone should watch NXT. And it's starting to really become a brand of itself, like a standalone brand. And, you know, it gets to the point where when you can when you can really do a fantastic job just rebuilding someone's character, like a Tyson Kidd, even Titus O'Neil, you know, in some regards. But I would say that NXT really, really, really made, if it revived anyone's career the most, I would certainly say Tyson Kidd, because it really did. It really did revive his career. And speaking of that, we have a comment on the RioWrestling.net live stream right now about Justin Gabriel. I've seen this already with the reports, but it's definitely worth noting. Justin Gabriel could have revived his character in NXT. I definitely think he would have been a really, really good NXT champion. His matches with Adrian Neville and his match with Hideo Itami was really good as well. But for some reason, they did not want to use him. They didn't see something in him, which I don't think they really gave him the opportunity. And like I said, I think he'll do absolutely well in Japan. He's already going to be on Pro Wrestling Syndicate here shortly, going back to his PJ Black character name. But, man, you know, basically the reports are he came to Raw earlier in the day, right before the Royal Rumble, and he was told that they didn't have anything for him. He went out and, you know, supposedly he went out and did some adventurous activities, and I think it was like jet skiing or something like that. It was just something very adventurous. And he comes back, and they said they don't have anything for him. So he leaves. He's done. He's like, I'm tired of this. And so they call him and say, okay, yeah, we got something for you. Where are you? And he said, hey, I'm out of here. I'm gone. I left. And it's like, that's so shady to me. I've always thought that Justin Gabriel was just underrated and underutilized, because he could really put on a show. He has amazing athleticism. And I think the Daryl Wolf gimmick was, you know, had an opportunity to work. I remember they gave him some vignettes on SmackDown not too long ago, probably a couple of years ago, probably. You know, he's from South Africa, and just gave him some decent, you know, vignettes. But, man, they just really didn't give him an opportunity that he really deserved. I was hoping that he, at the time, they gave him a couple wins over Cesaro when he was U.S. champion. And I think that culminated to like a pre-show match for U.S. title that he lost. That was probably the, as far as the singles run is concerned, that's probably the best, the furthest they took him. And he was getting over. Gabriel, at that point in time, he was getting over. And he could have, I think he should have had a U.S. title run, or at least a mid-card title run. It would have not hurt anyone. He has the athleticism to really be a really good featured attraction on a pay-per-view. But yeah, I mean, they really gave him the shaft when it came to potentially being a really good, notable name as a singles competitor in the WWE.
I was ashamed, man. Justin Gabriel had a lot to contribute, but they just didn't hone on to it and make it worth its while. And that's a shame. And that happens a lot. And I'm so tired of talking about the fact that, you know, people like Fandango and Owen Hart of the wrestling business just kind of go out of style and just fizzle out. And that's just too bad. Well, they've got so much talent there, but they build so much on the big people that they want to push, but they don't put enough emphasis on the people that can really make them a lot better, put on better matches, and just make the whole thing a better spectacle. So, I mean, to me, honestly, the Gabriel releasing is garbage, but they've been doing garbage with them for a long time. So good for him. I'm glad. You know, New Japan, they need a lot of prospects down there. So, I mean, we honestly just have to follow his career. If you really want to see this guy to the fullest, you'll follow him. And that's what everybody should do.
Absolutely. So, here's another trivia question for you, I'll give you dibs on trivia questions first
today,
just because I'm a nice guy.
Yes, sure.
So in the early '80s, this guy was in the had the tag team of the year with Ricky Steamboat. And his name is who?
Jay Youngblood.
Whoa, look at you.
I get that right.
Jay
yes.
Youngblood. Jay Youngblood, indeed, absolutely. Tag Team of the Year with Ricky Steamboat in 1983. Good job. Whoa, look, I'm impressed by that. I'm impressed. Great, great job. So, let's get to Raw. Let's take a deep breath and get to Raw. We'll be right back.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
So the hot topic right now is Kalisto's potential gimmick. They're thinking about calling him up, taking him off the mask, and giving him a very, very horrible gimmick. That's really sad. Let's just hope it doesn't happen. Let's get to Raw. Let's get to Raw. Starts off with Triple H and Stephanie McMahon talking about, you know, they've been talking about their big announcement going on, and you know, as far as the main event for WrestleMania is concerned. And so what ends up happening is, you know, them addressing the controversy, and this leads to Roman Reigns coming out and saying, you know, no, he's not going to give up his spot. And then you get Daniel Bryan to come out and just kind of say that he never got his opportunity back. And then you got Seth Rollins coming out and saying that, you know, he made himself known, this and that. And this leads to a match. This leads to a main event match between Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins, and the winner facing Roman Reigns at Fastlane. We'll get to the culmination of who won that. But I think that segment, I don't think it really lived to the hype of what's this big announcement, but I do think that it led us to at least creating some type of intrigue for Fastlane, because first of all, the name is just too generic to even invest in, and secondly, you know, it's the pay-per-view right before Mania, so you know, it's not much for me to be interested in. Because of who they're, you know, trying of their just lack of booking for the pay per view. Yeah, you got John Cena versus Rusev, but I really don't want to see that. So at least this segment brought some intrigue for watching the pay per view.
It brought some intrigue, but man, it was so boring. And the thing most about it. This is a fast lane. I don't want to know who Roman Reigns shouldn't have to defend his spot at WrestleMania. He won the Royal Rumble. He won the match. That's the stipulation. You win the Royal Rumble, you go to WrestleMania and fight the champion. There shouldn't be. I wish he would take it back from you. For me, that just royals the whole thing. You cannot do that. I mean, seriously, Chris, that is against the rules. How can they just tell somebody, you won the Royal Rumble, we don't think you're absolutely 100% guaranteed for WrestleMania spot. I don't have to prove myself to anybody, whether it be Daniel Bryan, whether it be Seth Rollins. You can't make me do that, but okay, I'm going to do it. So, fail for Rollins. I'm sorry, fail for Reigns, because I don't think he should have had to go for that match. He got the spot. That's it.
I think the biggest problem is, and I think Austin did a really good job explaining this on the podcast. He explained how, you know, you can't just keep going. You just can't keep changing stuff because a pocket of people don't agree with it. That's always going to happen. And if you book Roman Reigns to be champ, book him to be champ. Now, I said that it caused some intrigue to lead to Fastlane, but that's not more. I mean, that's not the big point here. The big point is they should have not made Roman Reigns the Royal Rumble winner, and should have booked Roman Reigns to have a nice, you know, top level match for Raw for WrestleMania to really build his character as Triple H was talking about, as far as the slow builds that are beneficial. But I mean, it's like, if you're going to have situations like this where you won the Royal Rumble, but you know, a week later, you know, a week, 2 weeks later, there's controversy behind it, you know, and man, I don't. There's no, first of all, there wasn't any controversy of the Royal Rumble. He eliminated Big Show and Kane, and then Rusev came in. He was outside, and he eliminated Rusev. He speared him and eliminated him. There wasn't any controversy behind it, but you know, of course, to please the Smarks, you know, there had to be some type of controversy behind it. And it's like, you know, I really don't get that. If you want to keep the essence, if you want to keep the integrity of the Royal Rumble, you know, just don't have these random, you know, I'm going to have this person win the Royal Rumble just to change it up. Batista was the perfect example for last year. Now, you know, that kind of went in a good way because, you know, nobody wanted Batista to main event WrestleMania in a singles match against Randy Orton. That just would have been a catastrophe. But don't have him win the Royal Rumble in the first place. That's the problem. Why would you have Batista win the Royal Rumble? The Royal Rumble should be won by people who really need the rub. Now, I was so upset when John Cena won the Royal Rumble a couple years ago and Ryback was the runner-up. I was so upset about that because John Cena did not need another Royal Rumble rub. And he won it in, what, 2008 when he came back from injury. And he did not need to win the Royal Rumble. We were already going to see Cena rock. I mean, Cena rock for the world title did not need a Royal Rumble win with it. At that point, Alberto Del Rio was the world heavyweight champion, but he was a face. I was okay with it, but it started to become stale. They weren't really creating him and booking him right. He was shooting against a heel Big Show at the time. And, you know, him, Del Rio turning heel and feuding with Ryback for the World Heavyweight Championship, just think about how much that would have boosted Ryback's career and character. Ryback needed that Royal Rumble rub because after that he started teaming up with Curtis. He became heel, had a couple just forgettable matches against John Cena, started teaming up with Curtis Axel, and you know where that went. So him being the runner-up didn't do anything, unfortunately. But if Ryback would have won that Royal Rumble and would have went against Alberto Del Rio, who was a heel, who would have turned heel by the time Mania comes, Alberto Del Rio was a heat magnet at the time. He had no problem drawing heat. The Feed Me More was starting to get hotter and hotter and hotter. And Ryback winning the World Heavyweight Championship against Alberto Del Rio would have been absolutely perfect for the Royal Rumble. But for some reason, John Cena gets that rub. Absolutely pointless. You have Del Rio, him running the Royal Rumble 2011 was okay. He needed that rub. It was a good idea, but he ended up losing his match at WrestleMania, so it really didn't mean anything. But you're giving, and it's good that, you know, Roman Reigns won the Royal Rumble. Probably not in Philly, probably not this year, but he still needed that Royal Rumble rub. I still say that Daniel Bryan needed that Royal Rumble rub as well, because as much as he's been playing the underdog, he's never, and because of injuries and so forth, he never really had an opportunity to be the guy. I think winning the Royal Rumble would have been a good notch in his belt. But it's like, you know, it helped Michaels, it helped Austin, you know, it helped Bret Hart, you know, it helped Luger, it helped Rock, you know, they got rubs because they weren't like huge top guys at the time. And when you're giving it to John Cena, when you're giving it to Batista, why even have a Royal Rumble if it's just for the sake of making forcing a big name down our throats and say, okay, well, you run the Royal Rumble, you can't say anything about it now. Absolutely ridiculous. And it's like you have to start booking the Royal Rumble correctly. And that the controversy comes with the horrible booking of the Royal Rumble match. And we've seen it for years now. If somebody's going to win the Royal Rumble, it's the whole point of the Royal Rumble is to get that rub to ascend your character or really become a top guy or really become a champion. Man, we haven't really seen that. We haven't really seen that in the past few years, unfortunately.
We haven't seen that forever. And you hit the nail on the head. The Royal Rumble used to be something that was like almost, it was like the playoffs. It was, this is the guy that's going to go on to the Super Bowl. And we just haven't seen that. We have seen it. This doesn't live up to the matter that it should. And again, you bring up the Cena's, it's one, the Alberto Del Rio's. It's never accumulated to anything. It's a shame. It stinks. I mean, we've got a lot of Raw to cover. We've got a lot to cover. Ladies and gentlemen, 347-84-8452. Pancakes and Power Slams. What do you think about the current state of the Royal Rumble? We want to know your opinions. The Royal Rumble, like you said, within the past few years, has been absolutely garbage. It hasn't made much sense to anything to lead up to the WrestleMania that they want it to be. It just doesn't. And it proved itself again. It's reared its ugly head. I'm done with it.
Yeah.
We got Fastlane. Fastlane seems like it could be legit, but yeah, it's kind of a generic title, like In Your House or something. So,
Yeah, oh, In Your House. Yeah, I remember those. Flavor of the Week this week is going to be just some conversation leading into WrestleMania of whether Derek or myself believe that The Undertaker should wrestle again. So we'll talk about that. And back onto Raw, but before that, got another question for you and or the Pancakes and Power Slams Nation. And, you know, live stream, wearewrestling.net. What year did Batista debut in the WWE? What year did Batista debut in the WWE?
Is that for me?
So the Roman Reigns, that's for anyone. That's for anyone. You can
2002.
2002, man. You are on it tonight. You are on it tonight. You've been watching your tapes, it seems like it. But yes, Batista did debut in 2002. What was his gimmick name at the time?
It was a he was the Deacon.
Yep. You got it. Deacon Batista. He was with Devon, yeah. And they had some of the Devon's music when he was Reverend Devon is one of my favorites. I think that that music is absolutely hilarious to me. But on Raw, Roman Reigns losing against the Big Show, I think this is a good idea. I really like this, actually. As much as I don't like the Big Show now, I think that this was good because I've said this many, many, many times about the underdog pop, about how the underdog pop is just something that does not go away. Just the mystique, the element of mystique and the underdog pop, it does. Those are two things that even the smarkiest smark heel lover fans, they clamor to. The underdog pop and the art of mystique. That's why Taker is always going to be over, and that's why Daniel Bryan is always going to be over, and Dolph Ziggler is always going to be over because they Undertaker has that mystique to him. That's why Sting's always going to be over. Taker and Sting always, you know, they have that art of mystique, and then Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler, they have the underdog pops, and so those are two things that are just, they're always going to get over. Now, when you have people who aren't really mysterious and don't receive underdog pops, then you have John Cena. And you have that category, which Roman Reigns seems to be going that way, which I don't like at all. But him losing a match, as crazy as this sounds, him losing a match helped his character because he's, you know, he can get that underdog pop that's, you know, that he needs instead of just, you know, just annihilating everyone. So I think that actually helped him yesterday on Raw.
If it helped him, that's great. It's, you know, and again, the Big Show, I mean, he's been so irrelevant lately. He's losing to everything, and he'll be beaten by the Big Show. But for Roman Reigns, that's going to help him just for the fact that it wasn't a clean win. J&J Security jumped in, did their thing. So, you know, feel shame, feel pity. But he had a huge pop compared to what was at the Royal Rumble. I thought that was his death nail, but it wasn't. I mean, people love him again. I'll write it out just like we have to. We just have to see what's going to happen with Roman Reigns. But, you know, Big Show winning last night, that was good for the Big Show. Not really, but, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Not really. Right, exactly. Next trivia question is, Pat Patterson defeated who to win the Intercontinental Championship for the first time? Pat Patterson defeated who to become the first ever Intercontinental Champion? So then we have the ascension of defeating Golden Stardust again. You know, again, you know, this is, you know, the ascension is so boring to me. I don't see anything for them. They're stale. The fans aren't buying them. And as much as the WWE wants to push them, I don't see anything coming out of these guys.
Nah, I don't really see anything. And, you know, Pat Patterson, which I wanted to talk about them. Hey, Gold Stardust, doggone it. They're going to be in a it's going to be a feud. Maybe it'll culminate in WrestleMania. Maybe that's one of the matches that's going to happen, which is good. That's fine. I get it.
Yep.
Pat Patterson was a Pedro Morales.
Nope. Incorrect. But a Golden Stardust feud, I think, you know, I kind of think that the ship has sailed, but, you know, it looks like we're seeing it finally, so I think that I'll come around very quickly as far as being on board with this feud because I wanted to see it for so long, and, you know, having it now is, I guess, not having it at all. So I think I'll buy into it sooner than later. Ryback defeating Luke Harper, I think that was really, really good for him. And I think it was a good idea for the Ryback to have that type of win against Luke Harper. I just don't know what they're going to do with him. Having him win the U.S. Championship would be absolutely perfect, but it just seems like they don't have a direction with Ryback as much as he's getting over again. I'm not a fan of that.
Ryback, I mean, think about where he was a few months ago, where he was absolutely nothing. Anything you want for Ryback could work. I mean, he seems really, still really plastic. It's like he doesn't really have a direction. He just needs storylines to help him. Like, he's trying to be a Goldberg. He's just not that. He just doesn't have it. I'll ride with the momentum behind him, but it's still just kind of one-dimensional for me.
Yeah. You know, I'll buy it. I got off the Ryback train, you know, quickly, but when he got really stale with Axel. But, you know, I got back on it. I'm cool with Ryback. Cesaro defeating Jimmy Uso. You know, this will probably lead to a tag team title match with Cesaro and Kidd against Usos. You're putting someone else in the tag team division. You know, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with Cesaro and Kidd. You know, they've been underutilized for so long. I'm just not going to put any stock in them. I was going to say a lot of stock. Honestly, I wouldn't put any stock in them because I just don't see them going far. I see them being kind of like a just, you know, flash in the pan tag team. I don't see any longevity with the two as much as it would make sense. I think they've even named themselves the Brass Ring Clan now, which is awesome, a really good name from the McMahon interview on Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast. And they have their T-shirts, kind of looks like the Bullet Club. I like the idea. I really like that type of concept. But I just don't see any longevity in the tag team. So if there's no longevity in the tag team, they just really just threw them together because they don't have anything to do with them. I just don't see a lot of stock being in them as far as a long title run or just a really solid and established tag team. I just don't see that happening.
It's not going to happen. And the Usos are going to continue to be dominant in the tag team division. That's pretty much the only team that they have that's relevant right now. And with Cesaro, I mean, he's tried so much with this guy, and he can do a lot, but you just don't want to put him out there to do the much. And so it's, so the Usos are the tag team division now, and that's pretty much it. They've kind of fallen apart as far as tag team goes, and it just makes me wonder what else, what's the new, the Ascension is not the new, that's not the answer. It's not the new tag team. But we got the Usos. But after that, we've had a few other matches with Miz and Mizdow. They're going to be splitting soon.
Yep. We got Bray Wyatt defeating Dolph Ziggler cleanly. Man, they're building up Bray Wyatt, and we saw that interview, that cryptic interview. Of course, he's talking about The Undertaker, talking about fear and things like that. It's just leading to a match between him and Taker, and I just don't. Please do not have us see Bray Wyatt beat Undertaker. It seems like it's pretty much a lock that we're going to see Bray Wyatt defeating Undertaker competing against The Undertaker, which makes no sense because D1 and 21-1 will be at WrestleMania, but he won't be going against The Undertaker. There's not even a rematch to that. It makes no sense at all to me. Just forget it, I guess. There's something that you'll never forget in pro wrestling history, but there's no rematch. It doesn't make sense to me at all. And we'll talk a little bit about whether we should see The Undertaker wrestle again. But, yeah, I mean, it seems like they're doing that to Bray Wyatt. As a heel, I've said before, it just hasn't worked out for him. And I just don't see him being a main event guy. I just don't see it as a heel. It's still getting stale to me. They're trying their best to build up Bray, but we've seen this already. We've seen this for almost a year and a half now, and I'm just not sold.
I don't think anyone's sold on Bray Wyatt. It's just too hard to tell. With him kind of hitting against The Undertaker for WrestleMania, that's fun for me because I love The Undertaker and always will. But again, I don't want to see him lose because that's the only solution to this Bray Wyatt issue. If Bray Wyatt loses to Undertaker at WrestleMania, it's not going to mean anything to Bray Wyatt. It's not going to mean anything to The Undertaker because that's the only time he's around. So what's the point of this match? And this doesn't make any sense, really.
Yeah, none. Not at all. Then we get Paige defeating Alicia Fox. Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that they give Paige the, you know, another push, you know, as a baby face. I'm cool with it. Sin Cara defeating The Miz. I really like what we're seeing with Miz and Mizdow. He's no longer a stunt double, but he's a personal assistant. So that build is okay too. It's been a rather long build, which I like. So essentially, we'll see Miz versus Mizdow and Gold Dust versus Stardust at Mania, which I think is good because that's two undercard matches that both have had some really good builds to it. So I would be very happy if we saw those two matches at WrestleMania.
That'd be astounding, and I'd love to see Miz and Mizdow. I'd love to see Mizdow's moment at the time that he just shines and makes everything great. So good for him.
Absolutely. Daniel Bryan defeating Seth Rollins. Daniel Bryan, I tell you what, man, there's a lot of momentum. And of course, there's been rumors that Daniel Bryan asked for a match against Dolph Ziggler, you know, because he was in the spot that he was in and it was granted. So, you know, right now it's penciled in Daniel Bryan versus Dolph Ziggler. But I tell you what, man, I wrote an article on Bleacher Report saying we should see Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar. That's a money match. We have to see it, and I really want to see it at WrestleMania. Give Roman Reigns some time to build. Let him beat Rusev, or let him beat, you know, Barrett for the title, or, you know, give him some type of, you know, important, notable match, high mid-card match to really help his growth. But I mean, this could be the last time, this could be the only opportunity that we can ever see Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar would be this year. So why not do it? I think that Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns would be a good match at Fastlane. It's intriguing. But I can see a screwy finish, but I'm hoping that it doesn't happen. I can see it happening, but unfortunately, it just seems like this Daniel Bryan, you know, high is going to be, you know, dampered by some random match against, you know, possibly Dolph Ziggler or some other person that would be a good match, but really doesn't matter in the long run.
Wouldn't happen in the long run, but Daniel Bryan against Dolph Ziggler, I think, would be an awesome, I mean, it'd be a match for the ages, I honestly believe. But I also see what you're saying with having Bryan against Brock Lesnar. But, I mean, again, the thing is, Roman Reigns won the Royal Rumble. He shouldn't have to do this. So it just shows that your faith with the WWE that they have and Roman Reigns, they don't have much faith in him, but it's due to the fact that the people don't have much faith in him, the WWE Universe. So it's weird. Yeah. We've never seen this in wrestling, I don't believe. And it just really makes a great controversy.
Sure does. Before we get to Flavor of the Week, Derek, what was Steve Austin's name when he debuted in the WWE?
The Ringmaster.
Good job. Great job. We'll be back with Flavor of the Week. Here we go.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
As Derek always says, 90 minutes is never enough. So just a quick couple minutes. I'll give Derek the floor at first. Derek, should The Undertaker wrestle again?
I think he should. Just for the fact, because I'd love to see the pop. I want to see the entrance. If for the last time, that's great. I mean, I don't expect a big match or a match for the ages. However, I do believe that that's good PR. I don't know. I mean, whatever the outcome's going to be, since he lost to Brock Lesnar last year, it's just put such a bad taste in your mouth. But, yes, I would love to see The Undertaker again. It's for show. It's for WrestleMania. It's you can't really take anything that happens at WrestleMania seriously because it's just all showcase. It's Super Bowl. That's it. Yes, I would love to see The Undertaker wrestle again.
I would not. No. If he comes back, if he wrestles one more time, it has to be against Brock Lesnar. He gets redemption. He wins. He beats Brock Lesnar. He rides off in sunset. He leaves his urn in the ring, and we never see The Undertaker again. But since that's not going to happen, there's no point for him to wrestle again. He got mollywopped. You know, I'm a big fan of Booker T. And as he was saying, in my neck of the woods, dog, you would call that mollywop, dog. He got mollywopped last year. And there's no reason for him to come back at all, especially to come back in a match against Bray Wyatt as if we were supposed to forget that he was that we saw one of the most devastating moments in the history of pro wrestling. He lost at WrestleMania after 22 visits. Absolutely horrible. We're not supposed to forget that. We're not going to forget it, and I just think him coming back would just be preposterous. Leave him away if you're going to just book him to lose in that regard. But it seems like we're going to see him against Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania, so hopefully that will be his last match. He goes into the sunset, and he gets in the Hall of Fame. So I guess that would be the best consolation prize that I would like. Ladies and gentlemen, next week, 150th episode. I'm so excited. JTG will be the guest host. Tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your Paul, tell your wrestling friends, all your wrestling freak fans that absolutely love the art of pro wrestling and everything engulfed in it. JTG will be on the Pancakes and Power Slam show next week. Guest host, 150 episodes. Fantastic show. Thank you so much, Derek, for just going along with the ride with this and with this week at 149, talking about some good stuff. Von Erich talk. Really enjoyed it. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, we are wrestling.net live stream. Bleacher Report. Those are my two homes. Love those guys. Thank you so much for continuing to support. Tim, until next week, 150 is on the heels. We're coming. 150 JTG, Daddy Loves Elijah and Ian. God bless. Goodbye. Enjoy your week. Goodbye.